Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.
Your future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Who win it now?
Altuve hits one to left field, and that's gone! He loves the three spot. Altuve with his 10th home run of the season just pressed into the Crawford boxes, and the Astros on the first pitch in the bottom of the fourth now lead it 9-1. There's a base hit into right center field. That'll score a run. Pena flying to third. He's going to be waved around. Here comes the throw by Brooks Lee. It's off target. That's a two RBI double for Jose Altuve. Aggressive send by Tony Perez-Chica. Pena delivers, and there goes the scoreless streak. The longest active scoreless streak in the major leagues end, going back to last season for Danny Kulo.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Welcome into the bullpen. Brian McDonald, Cam Smith, John Belmer here with you on a Saturday afternoon. Not raining for once, it feels like, in forever. So glad to have you boys both in as you're looking for, I guess, pieces of wood to knock on. Cam Smith, what's going on with you over there? You were searching with a zeal, and it looked like, to find something to knock on.
I was trying to knock on wood.
You're saying this desk, you're suspicious that this isn't wood?
It is not. Hold on.
I think it might
it
be
is wood.
It, you think, okay. It is, like, now, no, I am with you. Like, I mean, I'm not trying to call anybody out, but if this was not wood, I would not be surprised, is all I'm saying. Given the state of various things and
yeah, it could be some high end plastic
in around the building. But that was, of course, the voice of Todd Callis. You heard from Space City Home Network as the Astros beat the Twins last night, 10-3. Thank you for the audio for that. Make sure to check out Todd Callis every Friday with the Killer Bees. Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham joins us either 4 or 4:30, depending on his duties that day and whenever the manager speaks in the dugout before their Friday game. But Astros jump on the Twins early yesterday, Cam. It was 5-0 after the second inning. They got up to 8-0 after the third inning. The offense really came through. Colton Gordon, probably without argument, his best start of the season so far. A very encouraging start, a very encouraging game, and a continuation of a really nice hot streak for the Astros.
Yes, Brian.
Okay. All right. So let's get into. are you busy? Or are you? John, you have the welcome to the show, Cam Smith drop. Apparently, we need to welcome Cam into the show.
Welcome
to the show, Cam Smith.
Are you good? Is this a me and Johnny show?
All right. Now I'm here.
You're here?
I was just waiting for the entrance.
Okay. All right. Now you got audio play. Okay, John, we might just have to cut Cam off today. Now he's got audio playing.
Bye, bitch.
Yes. All right.
Sorry. I like I said earlier, I was awake for almost 24 hours straight. So let me just get myself together.
You need like a good slap in the face to bring you to.
What's no, that on that sneeze woke me up.
You sneezed like a bee right before the show started.
But no, to your point, yeah, probably his best start and a great time for him to turn it around, especially since the Astros are going on what is it?
7-game road trip.
Starting,
I guess, was it Monday or Tuesday? I don't remember. But yeah, so his first start of the season, which was, you know, I think early last month, early May, was I believe 4 1/3. But since then, 5 straight games where he's gone 5 innings plus. So, and we'll dig into the numbers as far as ERA and things like that in a minute, but when you're talking about these back of the rotation guys, you at least hope they can give you a length that would allow the bullpen not to be killed game after game, which was a big concern when, you know, you lose all the starting pitchers that they lost and you're looking at, you know, before you knew Lance McCullers, and obviously his last start wasn't great, but before you knew Lance McCullers, could be what he's been other than the last game. There was a real fear, at least for me, like, okay, Hunter Brown, great. Framber Valdez, great. Oh, my God, what's after that? The bullpen's going to be taxed to death trying to cover those next three games. But Lance has pitched well other than the last game. Now, Colton Gordon, a couple of games in a row, plus he's given you death for five straight games. Like, I'm starting to feel okay about the first four in this rotation.
Yeah, and I believe it was you earlier this season, because I was kind of freaking out on what the starting pitchers were going to do, and talking about how, you know, the 1 through 5 was just like terrifying to look. This was before McCullers was come back, and I think you kind of calmed me down when you're like, oh, well, as long as like the 1 through 3 are really good, you can get by with kind of a subpar four
bullpen.
Yeah, subpar 4 and 5. But these guys who have been filling in this year, I've been really impressed. I feel like in years past, when we've seen guys have to kind of fill in spots while we've had, like, obviously a lot of injuries with starting pitching, it's been really inconsistent. It hasn't been good. It's made you think that you're going to have to go out and get another starting pitcher. I'm not really feeling that right now.
Yeah, I think right now, if Colton Gordon could pitch like this, like his last two starts, 5 innings, 6 innings, 11 innings combined, 10 Ks, so almost a K per inning, 3 earned runs for an ERA of 2.45. Now, I wouldn't expect him to continue to pitch to a 2.45, but if he can pitch to mid-3s ERA, you know, give you 5, you know, 5 and a third, so, you know, between 5 and 6 innings, you combine that with Lance and then obviously Hunter and Framber, I think you're fine. Now, you still need depth because there's more than half the season left, right? Yeah. There's probably going to be another injury, you know, knock on wood, but that's just the way pitching goes in 2025. But if you can get with these four guys until the point Arrighetti gets back, I think your starting rotation's fine. Which now Arrighetti might be out to the All-Star break. Like he apparently, according to Joe Spada, will require like a full spring training. So you're going to have to make do for probably about another month, but I think it's possible.
Yeah, and even more so with the fact that the bats are starting to click. I think earlier in the year when the offense wasn't gelling, they weren't scoring runs. I mean, we were seeing games where it was 2 runs, 3 runs, 1 run. I think now that they're starting to hit better, they're starting to score more, you can get away with having your 4 and 5 in your rotation with, I'm not going to say you want them to have an above 4 ERA,
no.
But you can kind of get away with it now.
Yeah, like I really feel comfortable right now with their 1 through 4. Obviously, your horse is 1 and 2. And then, I think Lance has shown, I mean, I don't know how well Lance will pitch for the rest of the season. I don't know if Lance will be healthy the rest of the season, but I feel comfortable that his last outing wasn't what he'll be going forward. And Colton Gordon, I've been impressed with. Now, Ryan Gusto as their 5th starter, and then Brandon Walter White as their potential 6th if they ever go to 6-man, or at least the next man up if someone gets hurt. I'm not thrilled on those two guys. But look, if what we're talking about is one start through the rotation being the problem, I can live with that, especially considering all the injuries they've had. You mentioned the offense. Let's get into some of these guys that have heated up recently. I mean, we spent time in May like wondering if Father Time had finally beaten Jose Altuve. Well, not so fast, my friend, as Lee Corso might say. Last 19 games for Altuve, dude is hitting .376 with an OPS of 1,076. And get this, guys. Now, I know fun with numbers on pace guy is always...
Love it.
It's always a comical bit, and I like to lean into that comical bit because it's fun and it's ridiculous, and that's where I usually like to go with sports talk. But his 162-game pace, based off what he's done over the last 19 games, 51 homers, 136 RBI. So,
wow.
Look... Obviously, Jose Altuve will never come within 15 homers of a 51 homer season, but it just goes to show that 3 or 4 week stretch, like end of April through, you know, most of May, was just a slump. Like, this wasn't Father Time catching up with him. He made some adjustments, talked about being more selective, maybe going after one, you know, specific pitch instead of swinging at everything, and he's still going to be aggressive swinging the bat, but. Look, Altuve's getting up there in age, but I don't think he's close to like completely slowing down to the point where we have to talk about regression and being close to the end of his career.
No, and I mean, obviously he's not going to put up the numbers that he did 5 years ago. I mean, that, like you said, that just comes with time, getting older. Like things are going to drop, obviously, and you know, maybe switching positions, you know, had a little bit to do with it, but also them dropping him in the lineup seems to have really clicked.
I think it helped, yeah. And especially, you know, knock on wood, when and if Yordan Alvarez ever gets back. I mean, if they keep him in the three hole when Yordan hits and hopefully put Yordan at four, which to me is his best spot, I mean, not only is he hitting well now, but if you're the person in front of Yordan, you presumably are going to have pitchers be more aggressive with you, give you more fastballs, stay in the zone a little bit more because they don't want to walk a guy right in front of Yordan Alvarez. So that could help out Jose Altuve anymore. So I saw our man Johnny Belmer pose this question on Twitter. Was it yesterday or the day before, Johnny? Was it Friday? Was it Thursday?
I think it was Thursday.
It was Thursday. Will Jose Altuve get to 3,000 hits? So I did some number crunching. My initial gut reaction to Johnny was he was going to have to play, you know, three or four more seasons after this one to get there. And it's, yeah, I mean, unless he just gets incredibly hot far beyond expectation for a guy at his age, that's pretty much what it'd be. So I looked at his numbers the last three seasons, including this year, because you don't want to go back into his 20s. Like, he's not going to play like he's in his 20s, right? He's not going to be the 200-plus hit guy per season like he was in his early to mid-20s. So last three seasons, including this year, 369 hits in 309 games for a pace of 1.19 hits per game. So if this is being optimistic, because this is based upon that pace, which you would expect maybe to slow down a little bit, and it's based upon him playing 150 games per year, which he's only done, well, of the last two seasons before this year, he only did the one time. Now, two seasons ago when he played so few games, in part that was because he got his hand broken during the World Baseball Classic, so that's a little bit fluky. But 150 games for a guy of his age might be a little optimistic, but let's just take the optimistic approach. Right now, he needs 696 more hits to reach 3,000, so going by his average hits per game, playing 150 games per year, you're looking at about 178 hits per season. If, like, fully optimistic, stays healthy, plays 150 games, plays at this level. So you're talking about the rest of this season, three full seasons after this, and into a fourth season, which would be his age 39th season. So I guess the question to you two, seeing that kind of broken down, how optimistic do you feel about Altuve getting to 3,000 hits?
I am willing to bet my Kia Optima that he will get 3,000 hits.
I don't feel like that's that strong of a bet. No offense to your Kia Optima. I mean, am I wrong, Johnny? I mean,
you're not wrong.
Okay. I drive a Buick Encore. I'm not saying I drive a super nice car. Okay?
I will bet my roommate's Tesla.
We're all in radio, okay? It's okay. And we're not on the sales side of radio, so we get it. We're all dealing with the same thing here, which is not high-end automobiles, but I don't feel like that's that strong of a bet.
All right. 100% I think that he'll get
100%
3,000 hits.
Okay. So you're not worried about the nagging injury or the regression? Because, I mean, 178 hits is, I think that's on the optimistic side. I mean, when he gets to age 37, 38, 39, I think that's going to slow down. I mean, it could take that full four season and not just like the beginning of it. I mean, to give the kind of comparison of the only other guy to do it for the Astros, Biggio got in his age 41 season.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know if Altuve has designs to play that far, you know, play that far. But, I mean, we could be a point where if he has an injury, maybe two injuries, which has been the norm for him, fluky or not, then you could be looking at a guy that has to play to his age 40 or 41 season.
I mean, yeah, I mean, you can't predict injuries, but I feel like Altuve is the kind of guy that's just going to go till he literally has nothing left.
Run it till the wheels come off?
Run it till the wheels come off.
Yeah, I could see that with him. I think he's a baseball lifer. What about you, Johnny? Seeing these numbers, how optimistic are you?
Yeah, that's fair. I think Altuve is the kind of guy that will run it till the wheels come off. I would say I'm a little bit on the other side of this here, where I don't think he may get there, only because, you know, he isn't that bastion of consistency that he used to be, and he's getting older, and you never know with those injuries. And that's quite a bit. You said 171 hits.
178. Based upon what he's done the last three seasons, it'd work out to 178 hits.
That's a lot to ask.
It is a lot to ask. I think the main thing is it's asking for no regression, and it's asking for, like, not 100% health, because it's based upon 150 games per year, so you're factoring in 12 games missed. But, you know, I mean, you could get hit on the hand again during the World Baseball Classic. These things can get kind of fluky. So if you want to weigh on that, will Altuve get to 3,000 hits, give us a call or a text on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. But on the other side of the break, we got to talk about another person who had a big game last night and someone who's had a big season overall for the Houston Astros, and that is MVP candidate, question mark, Jeremy Pena. I think it's real. I think it's happening. How realistic of a chance does he have? We'll talk about that when the bullpen returns here in a couple minutes on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.
This is The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back in. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. It's The Bullpen. Brian McDonald, Cam Smith, John Domer here with you. If you want to find us on X, I'm at Sack by BMAC. Cam is at Clutch City Cam, and Johnny is at Third Coast Johnny, 3RD Coast Johnny. And if you want to reach us on the HRP listener line, give us a call or text on that line, 713-780-3776. I give out that number because I want you guys to answer the question of will Jose Altuve reach 3,000 hits in this upcoming conversation about Jeremy Pena. But I was just looking at see if we had any texts yet and clearing out the ones that are showing up as new that aren't new. And I saw something come in from 9378 that was about Iran and Israel. So I will not be reading that text. And that is not what I hope comes through the rest of the show. We will not go there as a show. That is all I will have to say about
Thank
that.
You.
But I'm pulling up the text line and all of a sudden it's Iran, Israel. I'm like, oh, hey, we're dummies on the radio talking sports. We got Mount Rushmore plus one coming up. And I'll give you a hint. Mine is not serious. We are not people qualified to settle the centuries-old, really feels like millennium-old wars over there in the Middle East. But, let's keep the –
Not my cup of tea.
Let's keep the text line to, sports and fart jokes. I don't know, something like that. All right. continuing with the Astros conversation, I mentioned Jeremy Pena in his possible MVP candidacy before the break. He had, three more hits last night? It was definitely multi-hits, including a double. But, man, I kept waiting. I don't know where you're at with this, Cam and John, but I kind of, through this stretch that started when he got moved into the leadoff role, I've kind of been waiting for that other shoe to drop. Like, okay, this is great, but is it kind of similar to the conversations we would have about Jalen Green? Oh, man, he's been hot for the last week, but, yeah. I mean, we know who he is. And Jeremy Pena, credit to him during his rookie season, he actually had 20-plus home runs that year. But for the most part of his career, starting in 2022, he's been a pretty mediocre, like even to slightly below average, like very slightly to below average offensive player. So I kind of kept waiting for the other shoe to drop. I mean, not his defense, obviously. We knew his defense would be good. But his offensive production since moving to the leadoff spot has been unbelievable. I mean, right now, Jeremy Pena, let me pull up his numbers. But, I mean, right now he's in war, which is when you look at MVP voting, it feels like the voters just go straight to the war line and just only look at that. And so on war, Judge leads the league right now, 5.1. Pena, second right now or is it 4.1? So there's a decent drop off from Judge to Pena. Like, so if the voting happened today, not only because of that number, but because of the name ID of Judge compared to Jeremy Pena, he would not win the award. But it just paints the picture of how elite he's been this year. And there's another drop off from Pena at 4.1 down to third, which is a tie between Julio Rodriguez and Kyle Riley at 3.3. So almost a full point there as well. But I don't know where you're at with his MVP candidacy, Cam. But do you think would you be surprised if he wasn't top five at this point? Like, where would you set the line?
I definitely think he's deserving to be top five. I just think that with what Judge is doing this year,
what he's done basically every year,
it's going to be damn near impossible for Pena to win it. But the fact that he's even being mentioned in the MVP race, I think says a lot about where he's come from the last few years to this year. And like you said, we're not even at the All-Star game. So like the average might drop, but those offensive numbers, especially when Yordan comes back, like the runs and the RBIs,
the runs in particular,
You would assume that those would increase. It's just, again, it's one of those seasons where he's having an amazing year, but then there's Judge. So it's just kind of like until you put up numbers close to that.
Oh, wow. Yeah. He's not going to. I mean, now, in batting average, he might. Right now, in batting average, he's hitting .333 for the season.
Which I think, to me, is the most.
It's crazy. He was like a .260-ish hitter.
Yeah. I always thought that, like, the power numbers and the runs and the RBIs would increase. But I always just kind of figured that the average would just kind of hover around, like, .280, like, .290.
That even feels optimistic. Because I think for the bulk of his career, I'll have to double-check this, but I believe he was about a 260-ish, 265 type hitter for his career. So yeah, I'm with you. Especially the way he would like seemingly consistently chase the sliders low and out. Like that has been a consistent like hand wringing thing with watching Jeremy Peña at bats. Is just he cannot at times lay off the slider low and out, especially when he's got two strikes and you'd hope he'd shorten up the swing and be a little bit more selective, or at least not, you know, at least not chase things that far out the strike zone. But .333 average, .386 on base, OPS is up to .884. Like I think top three. Like if they had the voting today, I think he'd be top three. Especially with the way people vote, almost exclusively based upon WAR. Like I don't think he has any chance to pass Judge at this point, and nor should he, because Judge is even far beyond him. But I think Jeremy Peña is easily top three right now.
Yeah, and to your point of like how he used to just swing at that slider. So in 69 games, he only has 43 strikeouts, which is crazy low compared to what he's been. I mean, so basically he's on pace to finish the season with under 100 strikeouts, which to me is the most impressive thing, because that just tells you how much he's worked on not going after the right pitch and not going after those crazy sliders that him and Altuve enjoy. So the low strikeouts is almost as impressive as that .333 average.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the math works out to more than 100 strikeouts if I had to do it on the fly. But I mean, to your point, not to get sidetracked. Like the strikeout rate being less than one per game is like if he's less than one per game, which as you said is the case right now. Like I would settle for that, you know, compared to where he was previously. So yeah, I'm hopeful he gets the recognition for this type of season, because you never know. Like, I mean, now some of the other guys in the top five for WAR include Julio Rodriguez, who's a much bigger name, Jose Ramirez, who's a much bigger name, even though he plays in, you know, a middle-ish market. Cal Raleigh, even maybe in part because of the nickname, the Big Dumper, I think might be a bigger name than Jeremy Peña. So I just hope he gets the recognition, because it sometimes takes, you know, like we talked about this with All-Star nomination. Sometimes the recognition for the success happens like a year delayed from when. So I just hope he gets that recognition, because based purely upon stats, he should be second right now in AL MVP. I don't know if he'll beat out some of those bigger names, but he should easily be top five, and I think he absolutely deserves top three. Moving past Jeremy Peña, someone else who had a big game yesterday with multiple hits, Cam Smith. I want to bring him up not only because I have another Cam Smith, you know, sitting just here to my right, but I find the conversation on Cam Smith interesting, because I think there's two completely different ways to go with this. I think overall, like if you look at defense and his slash line, I'm fine with what Cam Smith has done this season, given his inexperience. What was it, like five games above the double A or the single A level? He was just drafted about a year ago at this time out of Florida State. So given that limited amount of pro experience, his defense moving from third base to right field, no less, plus the slash line, I'm overall fine with that. But, man, the power has not been there. He hit two home runs on April 18th to move his season total to three, has not hit one since. I mean, that's quite a long time. Now, so I guess the question, like, I don't know, because part of the question on Cam, like when you looked at his hitter profile, was he wanted to go the other way with everything. And there was talk at the beginning of the season, like the Astros were trying to work on a swing to get him to pull the ball more, take advantage of your power. Because he's not – kind of like Jeremy Pena, where it didn't make sense that he was – like he went seasons hitting like 10 or less home runs. Because you look at him, he's built strong. Like, he's not a weak guy. Same thing – Cam Smith is a big guy who's built well. But I don't know, man. Like, if he continues at this home run pace, even though I've been – happy with the defense and the slash line, like I would kind of have to call this season a disappointment if he continues with this power, right? How do you feel about it?
I don't know if I could call it a disappointment based on the power numbers, because he isn't.
If he hits 10 home runs this season,
I would be okay with it, because he's double digit doubles right now. So if at the end of the year he's got over, you know, let's call it 25 doubles and 10 home runs. Like, I would say that that's a successful season based on the fact that, again, like we mentioned, barely any time in the minor league system had to switch positions.
That's kind of the thing I can't separate from my criticism. It's like he came into this with so little experience.
Exactly. So if this was, you know, like year two or year three, I would definitely jump on that plane of, okay, yeah, this is
oh,
this,
for sure.
This is,
yeah.
This
no,
is
if
winning.
This is year two or year three, I'd be send his ass down, cut him. Because, I mean, it's not just the home run total, because I think home run total, because sometimes, to your point about doubles, can be a little bit overrated. It's probably more fair to look at OPS.
Yeah.
Like the total amount, you know, your on base and your extra base hits. But, I mean, during that time from April 18th where he last hit a home run, his OPS has dropped from 745 to 691. So it's not just – now, obviously, home runs would help your OPS, but it's not just that he's not hitting home runs. Like, the on-base and the slugging are also coming down as well. So, like, I mean, multi-hit game last night, and he has 6 hits in his last 5 games, including 2 doubles. So maybe this is a little bit of a sign that he's starting to figure around it. The league – you know, he started off well. The league adjusted to him. Hopefully now he's adjusting back. But – it's just a question of what would I think you said, was it 10, if he hit in the season with 10 homers, 25 doubles, you would mark it as success?
I would say that's a great season for a rookie.
Okay.
Especially
if he's playing good defense. Yeah. And he had a great leaping catch a couple days ago up against the right field wall. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think that's completely unfair, but I guess my expectations were just for a little bit more power. Maybe I'm jumping the gun a little bit too much with his production. But quick injury updates before we get out and talk Texans on the other side of the break. Jacob Melton looks like a kind of a serious ankle injury. I mean, he had trouble. Like, he had needed help off the field, like could barely walk from one side of the locker room to the other. It feels like he could be out for a while, which sucks because he started off kind of slow with his offense production last night.
Yeah.
Multiple hits. So you hate to see that. It seems like he's probably going to be – I would be shocked if he doesn't end up on the 10-day IL. We'll see. The one that I'm really shocked by, and maybe this is just because I don't believe the Astros in anything they tell me, but Isak Paredes with his hamstring strain a couple of days ago, they're saying that it was not serious and Joe Espada doesn't think he's going to go on the 10-day IL. I know the three of us with our experience playing fantasy football – if some dude gets a hamstring strain, it's like, all right, well, I'll see him in 3 weeks. Like, minimum. Nico Collins, I know, different sport, blah, blah, blah. Different severity, blah, blah, blah. But Nico Collins missed 5 weeks last week, or last year, when he had his hamstring injury in the game against the Bills. So, I mean, I'm not coming out here saying, oh, Isak Paredes is going to miss a month guaranteed. But I feel pretty safe saying that he's going to end up on the 10-day IL. There's no way you can have a hamstring strain, unless it's barely even a hamstring strain, I guess, and not miss 10 days or more.
Yeah, and it'd be one thing if he was DHing and he's not having to move around a lot, but he's in that hot spot. He's at third base. Yeah. So, like, even if it's not as severe as we think, you still have to give him some time because you can't just throw him back in there so that he can – and possibly, you know, re-aggravate it. And at the same time, this is also the Astros. So we cannot believe anything when it comes to like a timetable with them. So I'm with you. I think it's going to take more than 10 days.
Yeah, and it's a little bit concerned. I mean, they're obviously more than one player deep in their offense. I mean, we've talked about Jose Altuve and Jeremy Pena playing extremely well. But, I mean, Christian Walker is in the middle of having his best month so far as an Astro, and it still sucks. Like his best, he's having his best month right now as an Astro in June, but that's a 238 batting average and a 709 OPS. I mean, it's still It still sucks.
I mean, I'm glad he's over 200 now, but...
Yeah, like, I'm glad he's not flirting with the Jose Abreu line. I mean, congratulations on that, Mr. Walker, but yeah. I still think, and maybe this is PTSD from the dealing with the Astros medical staff and just the shenanigans we see coming out of that department, but I still don't believe he was fully healthy when he started the season. Like, remember he had that oblique injury during spring training, like, really early on?
Yeah.
And they, like, the initial timeline was like, okay, he's going to be back, like, second, third week of the season, and boom, he's there day one. Like, I think, I don't know. Just from everything we've seen with Yordan and Kyle Tucker last year, Christian Javier's neck injury turning to Tommy John, like, I'm kind of believing maybe he was rushed back. I have no way of proving that, but I don't know. Christian Walker, from what we've seen of him in the last 3 years in Arizona, is not this level player. Something, I don't, maybe it's, maybe he got Thanos snapped and he just suddenly hit the age regression overnight. It's, I mean, I guess it's possible. I just don't believe that to be the case. I don't know. I don't think he's fully recovered from that oblique injury. Maybe he should have worked out of it by now, but maybe that slowed him down all season. No way to know, but just my two cents. All right, on the side of the break, let's get into some stock up, stock down from the Texans minicamp and OTA so far. That when the bullpen returns, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Welcome back into the Bullpen. Brian McDonald, Cam Smith, and John Belmer with you here until 2 o'clock. And, of course, Mount Rushmore Plus One coming up at 1:30. If you want to join in the conversation, give us a call or a text on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-376. We did get one text in from 6171 suggesting things we could talk about besides the things that we couldn't talk about. And no, 6171, we will also not be talking about what's going on in California. That is, I told you, sports and fart jokes. That's what we're talking about today. Nothing else we'll get on the air. I did want to bring up one of our most loyal listeners quickly before we get into the Texans conversation. Brought up when we were having the talk about Altuve and 3,000 hits, he brings up a good point, like to kind of, I guess, push back my math even a year further into Altuve's career before he could get to 3,000. I mean, I wasn't even factoring in that it looks pretty likely we're going to have a lockout in 2026, which, man, I mean, obviously it would suck for... We wouldn't have any baseball to watch or to talk about here in the show. But for guys, there's not many people chasing. I mean, I guess Freddie Freeman, I guess, is chasing, although I think he's a little bit older than Altuve. He and Altuve are the only two guys with 2,300 hits among active players. But it really sucks for a guy like Altuve who is chasing that sort of rarefied air. It could have just a year chopped off of his career. And now pushing him into maybe, you know, age 40, 41 or beyond. So that if he misses 3,000 by basically a season and we miss the entire 2026 season, that would be a huge bummer. All right, but moving over to Texans right now, and if you want to join in on that conversation, again, HRMP listener line 713-780-3776. So Jonathan Alexander from the Chronicle had a stock up, stock down from his OTAs and minicamp coverage. I just want to run some of these by you and give you what he said, get your reaction to them. Starting with the Texans' second-round pick out of Iowa State, the wide receiver, Jaden Higgins. A quote from Jonathan Alexander, and this is one of his stock-ups. All these are stock-ups right now. Quote, it's clear Higgins has skill and the potential to be the number two wide receiver in this team. His combination of height and speed will give him a significant advantage, similar to Nico Collins, his counterpart on the opposite side. Do you think that's a realistic expectation this season for Higgins to work himself into the number two wide receiver, surpassing Christian Kirk?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I as much as I appreciate Christian Kirk is here to be that veteran slot guy, like the three, the four. But from everything that we saw at Iowa State with Higgins and what he's done in spring training, I definitely think that he's going to be the number two.
Man, if he like legit earns that, and I everything I get from the staff, they wouldn't, because you sometimes see that when there's like a first round pick, and that, I know he's a second, but he was what, the third pick of the second round, second pick of the second round.
Yeah,
you sometimes see that with like guys drafted that high where they get forced into a role just because the team drafted him to be that, not because they earned that. But if Higgins actually earns that through play and you have Nico and a healthy Christian Kirk, because if Christian Kirk's healthy, then, you know, I think we're minimum talking like 60 catches, 800 yards, something
at least,
out of the slot, you know, plus play out of the slot. I'd be really excited about this wide receiver room. I have gone from a point pre-draft, really, I guess pre-Christian Kirk, from where I was like, ugh, this might have a chance to be one of the worst wide receiver rooms depth-wise, because obviously Nico Collins is great.
100%.
But I thought, man, this could be a train wreck of let's double Nico every play because no one else can beat us. I've gone from that point to adding Christian Kirk, then Jaden Higgins and Jalen Noel, the Iowa State boys, to feeling like this could be, one of the strengths of the team. Now, it's not the strength of the team. It's probably the defensive line or the secondary. But this could really be one of the strengths of the team. I'm really excited about this wide receiver room.
I love Jaden Higgins. I mean, he was somebody that I wanted the Chargers to draft. So the fact that he went to the Texans, I was like, okay, like, sweet. I can still watch this guy play. But the fact that he's so similar to Nico Collins.
Yeah, 6'4", like same body weight.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to terrify defenses.
Yeah, it's a real matchup problem to me.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
How many teams, and I'll give you a hint, the answer is zero, have two corners, like if Higgins and Nico are your two outside wide receivers, which obviously is what the Texans hope will be the thing, like how many teams would have corners who can match up and like contest balls on jump ball situations? Or like two guys who, with their height and their jumping ability, who could, you know, contest and take balls away from Nico and Jaden Higgins. Like, I don't think there's a team in the league that could do that.
No.
So, I mean, especially in the red zone, 2'6", 4" guys? And neither of them are the tight ends. You got another tall guy there with whoever plays tight end. Like, that could be a real matchup nightmare, especially in the red zone. All right, moving along for one of those other stock ups. This, again, from Jonathan Alexander of the Houston Chronicle. He had Kalen Bullock, the safety, second-year safety. What he said about Kalen Bullock. Kalen Bullock's best day was Wednesday. He made one play in coverage where he skied high to deflect a Stroud pass intended for Nico Collins. The play was so nice, even Collins helped him up and told him nice play. Like, man, I am very bullish on Kalen Bullock. I mean, and you might need it even more because we'll see what happens with Jimmy Ward and his spot on the roster. He might not be on the team next time we have a show. But, like, Kalen Bullock, man, like, he didn't even start the season as a starter. He's more kind of like a package guy, just kind of a situational guy. And he worked his way in, I think finished the year with 5 interceptions, real playmaker. But this has been a position safety where the Texans, other than maybe a couple years with Daniel Manning, maybe a few other times in history, like this has been a team that it feels like they've very rarely had plus safety play. So it's just so refreshing to not only have a guy that you think can cover, which, I mean, what a crazy thing to say. You just want a safety who can cover because it feels like the Texans almost never have that. But not only can he cover, but he can make plays and turn errant passes into interceptions. I think the sky's the future. I think Pro Bowl's in his future for Kalen Bullock.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's a ball hawk. And the funny thing was I feel like there was a lot of, like, negativity thrown his way when the Texans drafted him. And –
yeah, people thought he was drafted too high. I don't remember exactly how high they thought he should go, but I remember when they took him in the third round, people thought it was a little bit of a reach.
Yeah, and they were all this whole like, oh, his lower body is too small, his legs are too thin, like he's not going to be able to be that safety that you want. And here we are, and it's been 1 year later, 5 interceptions later, and this guy is already, I mean, I'm not going to say that he could have made the Pro Bowl last year, but this is a guy who, for everything we've seen over the last year, very much looks like a guy that could be in the Pro Bowl in a couple years.
Yeah, I think he, like, as much as we talk about, you know, Stingley being the best corner in the league, like Lasser being like the best, possibly even best number two corner in the league, I think Kalen Bullock could work himself into a part. Into a point where we say he's, you know, top 3 to 5 safety in the league.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's unrealistic.
And it helps that you have those two cornerbacks because it makes the safety's job a little easier. They can just go out there.
Also helps that you have guys like Will Anderson and Daniel Hunter that cause them not to have to cover for as long. And helps when you have D'Amico Ryans with the best defense. Defense is going to be if you like defensive play, this team's going to be so much fun. All right, a couple more stock ups and a few stock downs on the other side of the break when we get back here in the bullpen. ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Don't go anywhere.
Houston's only FM sports stations, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. This is the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio back with you today here on a Saturday. Brian McDonald, John Domer, and a jittery Cam Smith who... Man, you just told me how much caffeine is in that drink you're drinking, which is like what you said, like the same as like four coffees?
Yeah, it's like four coffees stuffed in one can.
Yeah, like I'm a little worried. Are you going to get through the show or are you going to spontaneously explode at some point?
No, I'll get through it. I just might have to go run 20 miles to, to work
this off.
You're just
going to start cleaning stuff up around the studio. Just like, hey, no, Johnny, I'll podcast today. Like, just try to work out your energy.
See me running up and down the ramp outside.
Doing wind sprints. Yeah. Is that not a drink that you drink very often? Or
I do drink Celsius, but not the smaller can.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't paying attention to what I was reaching for, and I grabbed this. And then after I purchased it, I was like, wow, this is almost like a tall boy.
Yeah.
And I looked, and I was like, oh.
And you've been jittery today.
I've been jittery now.
All right. Well, me, John Domer, might have to take over the show if Cam Smith explodes on us. Before we get back into the Texans conversation, and if you want to join in on that conversation, text or call us 713-780-3776 on the HRMP listener line. We've got a text in from 8596. Altuve will have to be Bernie Mac, Mr. 3000, to get to 3,000 hits.
You know, it's funny he brings that up because in my head when we were talking about that, I was like, this – especially with the lockout.
Yeah.
I mean, the Bernie Mac one.
I think that's what it's in reference to,
Well, if I'm not mistaken, the Bernie Mac one wasn't because of a lockout. It's because
there was a statistical error.
Hits.
They took three hits away from him. I guess they made him errors or something like that.
So he had to come back and play.
To get three hits.
To get three hits.
Like, he had his whole, like, merchandise line, like, his brand was built upon being Mr. 3000, not Mr. 2997. Yeah, exactly. So... hopefully Altuve won't retire, then has to come back for one more run to get three hits like Bernie Mac did in that movie. But back to the Texans, stock up, stock down from Jonathan Alexander from the Houston Chronicle. Stock up, and Cam said, he said it in the break, like, I forgot this guy was on the roster. But Cade Stover, second year tight end. No, I'm not blaming you. I mean, tight end, like, I had that conversation. I mentioned in the last segment, it kind of feels like the Texans never have elite safeties. Like, you could also say, other than the Owen Daniels years, that the Texans never have, you know, great tight ends. Dalton Schultz is, he's fine. But, like, they haven't very often, you know, had great tight end play. They spent picks on them. They just, you know, tight ends are one of those positions that are very hit or miss. But
And before Owen Daniels, it's almost like you have to go all the way back to the inaugural season when it was, like, Billy Miller days.
Well, Billy Miller, who famously scored the very first touchdown in franchise history, and I think it was that same year, or maybe it was the year after, but they drafted Benny Joppru out of Michigan with their second-round pick. Dude played zero games for the Houston Texans. And they had there was another guy they spent a second-round – Fedorowicz. They spent like
C.J. Fedorowicz.
C.J. Fedorowicz. They spent like a second-round pick on him, and he did nothing.
Well, that was the year where Ryan Griffin – punched a window during the draft, and they were like, ooh, is he really that upset that they're drafting C.J. Fedorowicz, who went on to do nothing?
So. Yeah. Texans and tight end, not a great combination. But on Cade Stover, Jonathan Alexander writes, well, Dalton Schultz was out during the first several practices of the spring. Cade Stover was able to get in more reps with the first team, and it has paid off in Tuesday's minicamp practice. Stover was easily Stroud's safety blanket when his other receivers weren't open. In fact, Stroud's first completed pass at the spring since resting his sore shoulder was to Stover for a big gain on a corner out. Like, I think sometimes, specifically to tight ends, we've been spoiled by guys like, you know, Brock Bowers and Sam Laporta and TJ Hockenson, some of these guys that come out and, like, boom, year one, they're amazing. Like, that is not – now, I know it's been more and more often the case recently, But traditionally, tight end is maybe the slowest developing position in football. I mean, that or quarterback. But like, I think it's we got to leave ourselves open to the idea that Cade Stover in year two could take a big leap, especially the chemistry with Stroud, as Jonathan Alexander mentioned, because they're teammates at Ohio State. The natural progression of year one to year two. Dalton Schultz obviously has been pretty meh. I don't think they're extremely impressed with what he's done since they paid to resign him a year ago. So I think Cade Stover, we'll see. Look, my optimism level is pretty low because it's a crowded wider, like it's a crowded target of like, you know, group of targets. He's not going to be, I mean, he's not going to get more targets than Nico or than Jaden Higgins or Christian Kirk or probably Jalen Noel. Maybe not even Joe Mixon. So, like, his where he is on the pecking order is pretty low. But I think there's a chance we could look back after the season and say Cade Stover was their best tight end.
Possibly. And, I mean, to the whole Dalton thing, I was so high on him when they got him from Dallas. And he's – I mean, honestly, it has been a disappointment. But you I feel like because it's D'Amico and you – and I'm not comparing any of these tight ends to George Kittle, but one would kind of assume –
that name did pop in my head because he had a bad – bad by recent standards. He had a slow rookie year. It was like 400, 500 yards, maybe something like that. And all of a sudden, year two, I think it was year two, he set the record for tight ends and receptions.
I think you're right.
It was either receptions or receiving yards, one of the two.
But look what he's turned into, and look how great that has been for Brock Purdy. And D'Amico came from that team, so one would kind of presume that the tight end would be an important position on this team. And like you said, obviously he's not going to get a ton of targets just because of the wide receiver core. But if you can have a tight end that is still giving you 800, 900 yards.
I think that's pretty optimistic. I mean, Dalton Schultz the last couple of years has been like 600, I think 700 maybe.
He's been a disappointment since he came from Dallas.
Given the other names that CJ is going to be throwing to and what we think of those guys, like if whoever the tight end one of this team, let's say, you know, regardless if it's Cade Stover or Dalton Schultz, like if they end the year, let's say 50 for 600, I'm happy. That's kind of my bar with this team. Like, and that's obviously a massive jump up for Cade Stover. I just think, man, Dalton Schultz, I mean, I try to avoid to use the over cliche like phrases and things that people say, but I just don't think he has that dog in him. Like, you watch him out there, like, passes over the middle, he alligator arms. Like, whenever he gets the ball, it feels like he goes down instantly. Like, he's not fighting for the extra yards. He's not breaking tackles. He's never running away from anybody. Like, I think of their tight end room, I'm forgetting the name, the guy that got hurt last year at the beginning of the year, who had the big long touchdown pass in the Browns. Brevin Jordan also has... He probably has the best athletic profile of the tight ends, but I think Cade Stover can be the guy that separates, maybe breaks a few tackles far more than Dalton Schultz. So I hope he gets the chance. I don't know if he will because they paid Dalton Schultz, but I just, man, I think the overall thing to take away from this is I'm just completely down on Dalton Schultz.
I mean, me too. And I think it helps the fact that Stover and CJ were teammates. You feel like
it can't hurt.
Yeah. But I also think when they drafted Stover, what was it, the fourth round. I feel like they drafted him hoping that he would turn into that future starter.
Sure. And I mean, that's not bad draft capital for a tight end.
And Dalton was almost kind of like the safety blanket. Like,
I think they like Dalton more than that because they paid him like a 3-year, $30 million contract. Same offseason.
Was it that much?
Yeah. So it's like 3 years, 30-ish million. Well, let me fact check me, but it was in there.
Now
it
I'm
was
even more irked at Dalton.
Yeah, no, Dalton Schultz can get bent. Let's move on to someone else. I don't want to talk about Dalton Schultz anymore. One more stock up from Jonathan Alexander, and that's with probably for most people, including myself, an unexpected name. But Jake Andrews, the center formerly from the Patriots, Jonathan Alexander writes, "The Texans have continued to mix and match their offensive line combinations throughout the spring, but one of the constants running with the first-team offense has been newly acquired center Jake Andrews. The Texans were fortunate to acquire him off waivers after being released by the New England Patriots. He took all the first-team reps in Tuesday's and Wednesday's practices, while incumbent Jarrett Patterson mainly was with the second units. And I'll combine that because two of these guys were on the stock down, And that was, as you might guess, Juice Scruggs and Jarrett Patterson. Juice Scruggs, I think this was the most damning. So I'll just read his, and then we can talk about the center position overall. But Jonathan Alexander writes about Juice Scruggs. Juice Scruggs has been a little bit of an afterthought in recent weeks. I don't love to hear that about a former second-round pick. He's either been with the second team at guard or the third team at center, which isn't a positive sign for the former second-round pick. Scruggs began the 2024 season at center, but struggled with communication and had given up the most pressures for a center before his benching. Like, I don't know what happens to Jake Andrews, but like maybe Jake Andrews is good. I don't know. I'm guessing no, because the Patriots, you know, not a great team, released him.
Yeah.
Just going, you know, very surface level off of that. But I take this more from the Juice Scruggs side. Like, if Jake Andrews, released from the Patriots, comes in, like, immediately pushes him down to third string center, Juice Scruggs, you drafted in the second round, is getting pushed out by a waiver claim or a cut and release guy to push you down to the third string. Like, we're going to have the bust conversation with Juice Scruggs, I feel like, pretty soon.
Oh, yeah, because it's one of those things where it's like, okay, is Andrews better than we think, or is Juice just really bad?
I think it's a mix, but more the latter.
Just really bad.
Or at least, yeah, but at least below average, and they think Andrews has a chance to be slightly above average, yeah. Something like that. But think about that. He's a second-round pick. Like, this would be different if Scruggs was a fifth-round, sixth-round pick, someone on the last day of the draft. Like, those guys get replaced by people coming in all the time. The team has nothing invested in you, so if they think they can get just 1% better, you're out. They have nothing invested in you. That's not the case with the second-round pick, especially second-round pick 2 years ago. Like, I don't think they would make the move to Jake Andrews if they thought they're only getting 1% better or even play. Like, for them to push out a second-round pick that this regime drafted, like, I think this was probably a significant difference between him and Andrews.
Oh, yeah. And
which I don't know if that's a good thing, because Andrews might be bad, but it might be that Scruggs is just that much worse.
But if Andrews is bad and he's still better than Scruggs, then I suppose you still have your answer at center, because I feel like that's been one of the most inconsistent positions on this offensive line the last couple
years.
Yeah,
that and interior guard.
It's the center position. So the fact that Andrews is coming in and he's doing pretty much all the reps at the first team, it sounds like you – I mean, we're still far away from the season. We obviously have to see him play in, like, spring, you know, the preseason games to get kind of more of a feel for him. But the fact that he's making a name for himself, you might have your answer at center.
Yeah, and this might be kind of the case of, you know, new offensive coordinator comes in, your offensive line coach is someone who was promoted, didn't have the main job last year. This might be a case of, like, new guys come in and, like, want to see new options.
Yeah.
Because like, what they saw on tape from Juice Scruggs, like, they want to come in and put their own prints on this, like, their own stamp on it. Like, they don't want to run back what the guy before them did. So that could be working against Scruggs as well, but not an encouraging sign. Two more real quick stock downs, because I think they're pretty obvious takes here. But the other two that Jonathan Alexander mentions in his article in the Houston Chronicle was Dameon Pierce and Jimmy Ward. We know the story with Jimmy Ward. Got arrested, if you haven't heard, allegations of choking and threatening to kill a woman in his house who had to allegedly escape the house and call 911. Look, I mean, Jimmy Ward is not playing right now because he's dealing with a foot injury that he had surgery on. He's 33. I don't think he's played all that particularly well over the last 2 years, like, in part because he's now 33. Like, I know Jimmy Ward goes back with DeMeco to the 49ers days, so he probably has a trust that he can execute what he wants to do with that defense, but it's probably time to move on from Jimmy Ward. I mean, you got C.J. Gardner-Johnson in the trade with the Eagles that sent Kenyon Green there. You've got, obviously, Kalen Bullock.
You drafted old buddy from USC.
Yeah, like, I think it's time to move on from Jimmy Ward. And then Dameon Pierce, the blurb there is he's missed the entire spring with an undisclosed injury. Like, an undisclosed injury that they thought, like, let's go get 3.2 per carry last year, Nick Chubb, another 29-year-old running back. Like, that can't be a good sign from Dameon Pierce. Chubb, who had Chubb had like a Tank Dell-level catastrophic knee injury.
Yeah.
Came back, averaged 3.2 per carry, and then hurt his foot again. It missed the rest of the season. Like, and he's 29, same age as Joe Mixon. You got a pair of 29-year-old running backs, and Dameon Pierce can't get on the field.
This one doesn't really...
It doesn't surprise me, but it kind of, like, if you had to guess, does Damian Pierce make this team? I kind of think he doesn't.
I think he's still, well...
Well, it's, okay, so it's Mixon, it's Chubb, it's Woody Marks. There's three. I mean, you're probably keeping four. I don't know who else would be in competition off the top of my head for Pierce, but, I mean... You could say Pierce plays special teams. He's had a couple kick returns for touchdowns, but they've got wide receivers to do that. Yeah. Jalen Noel plays special teams. They Braxton Berrios plays special teams. Reportedly, John Metchie is working with special teams during the OTAs and minicamp. So, like, I don't know if they even need Damian Pierce for that.
I don't think so. I mean, just what a crazy downfall going from a thousand-yard starter.
Well, just short. He missed the final four games of the year.
Just short to now being the third string, possibly being the fourth string. Yeah.
To a guy
in 2 years.
To a guy averaging 3.2 per carry, yeah. Coming off multiple serious injuries.
And he only has those somewhat decent numbers last year because he had that one game where he had 170 yards.
He had 170 off, and that came off of what? He had like an 80-yard
run. Run, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Yeah, I don't think Damian Pierce makes the team. Anyway, we're way over. Let's get out the other side of the break. We got some NFL topics to kick around. That when the bullpen returns for hour two, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right Rug.